Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show. Today, Serie A. Inter is coming, but could Sarri be going? We'll have the latest from Serie A and from Ligue 1 too. Plus a word on Portugal's Super Clásico, the Bundesliga, where it's Haaland 0, Volland 2, and Spain, where the Bas were beating Barca and leaving the Bernabeu in an Isaac Hayes. All that and more in the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Thank you so much for being with us today. And we're joined today by Raphael Honigstein. Hello, Rafa.
Hello, James.
Also here, looking splendid, Alvaro Romeo.
Thank you.
Not at all, Alvaro. And we've got Julien Laurent.
Bonjour, bonjour.
How nice to see you, Julien. And on the line, James Horncastle. James.
Hello.
All right. You're in Italy.
I am, yes.
All right.
Yeah, Storm, what is it?
Kira.
Kira, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's James Horncastle in Italy. And, well, we've got a lot to talk about because, I mean, he was at the derby last night in Milan. That was huge. We'll be hearing about that ever so soon. Rafa, what are you itching to tell us about from the Bundesliga?
Well, it doesn't sound like a big story because it ended 0-0, but the big game between Bayern and Leipzig was very interesting for many different reasons, James, and I'm going to tell you about every single one of them.
You're going to try?
I'll try.
Alvaro Romeo, big stories in Spain.
Yeah, I think that the Basque Derby is one of the big ones because both Real Sociedad and Athletic de Bilbao will be playing the Cup semi-finals after beating Real Madrid and Barcelona, who, by the way, managed to win this weekend, but in a very different fashion. Barcelona needed some help from the referee and some not help from the referee to win this game.
I see, or I think I do, but we'll find out more later on. Julien!
The big game was PSG against Lyon on Sunday night, and PSG, as often in that fixture, won. Why are you smiling? It was a surprise.
Headline news.
But my boy, Ryan Cherki, started, the 16-year-old
yes.
prodigy. Yeah, he played for an hour.
Ooh, and Dimitri Payet did another worldie.
Yeah, and Arsene Wenger might be back in France very soon.
Wow, we've got an awful lot to talk about. We're going to begin, though, with Serie A next.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Compagno di squadra, arriva Moses, il cross in mezzo, Lukaku! Il quarto gol dell'Inter! Il quarto gol dell'Inter!
James Horncastle!
Hello!
Hello again! Inter back on top of Serie A, tightest title race in decades, and talk of Maurizio Sarri getting the chop. Where do you want to start?
I think we should start with what is already a contender for Game of the Year, the Derby di Milano, because I think it was a fantastic spectacle both in the stands in terms of the choreographies that we saw, although I'm not sure how much of that was actually broadcast on TV because I'm not sure you can broadcast Inter on international TV. But that was great, and also the game just lived up to it as well with Milan putting in what was probably their best first half performance of the season. I saw a lot of the kind of irony, humour on social media comparing it with the sort of performance you'd get from a Maldini, Kaká, Shevchenko Milan side, and then the second half being very reminiscent of a Jamal Mesba, Kiske Honda, Christian Zapata style Milan side. But it was just magnificent. Magnificent.
All right. Well, so the whole game had been set up really nicely by Juventus losing their second game in three matches on Saturday, giving into the chance to go back on top. And as you mentioned, fantastic choreography in the build-up. This Inter Merida, the display that the Curva Sud put together, that was a refinement of the Telefonini, the mobile phone display that the Lazio fans had tried at their derby.
Yeah, so Lazio had tried it without success. And then I think they played Verona, was it on Tuesday night? And they tried it again, this time much more ambitiously with the Eagle. And that was done splendidly. But this is now
so
kind
how,
of very
much... How does it work exactly?
Well, you just hold up your phone and turn
phone?
The light on.
Right.
And as long as you're sat in the right place, you help create a message.
Is this something that has started at the Stadio Olimpico, or is this come from somewhere else?
So I believe this has started at the Stadio Olimpico. I've certainly never seen a kind of mass choreography of people turning on their phone lights in the way that I had at the Olympico before. You know, I'm sure the Lazio fans will probably be claiming copyright, but if anyone else has done it before on the same kind of scale, I think that's the important thing.
In the East, they do it with drones and stuff, of course. But anyway, so it had all set up really, really well for Inter. This was their big chance to go back on top of the table, but the game didn't begin at all well for them, did it?
No, I think it was one of the worst displays I've seen from Inter in that first 45 minutes. Milan really rattled them, playing 4-2-3-1 with Calhanoglu just off Zlatan, and that left-hand side of Milan's with Teo Hernandez and Ante Rebic. Rebic, who's been really kind of reborn since January, caused a lot of problems down the side of Candreva and Diego Godin. And Zlatan, who, you know, we've mentioned the effect that he's had on the mood of the club and also just on their kind of attendances delivered, be it with the knockdown for Rebic's first goal and then scoring the second as well. And if anything, it felt, and Conte admitted this afterwards, Milan could have scored more goals in that first half. And then I think in the second half, what we saw really was a young team, Milan, who's still got the youngest average age in Serie A for their starting 11, even with a 38-year-old Zlatan up front, paying that mistake for inexperience and then fading physically, particularly in the latter stages of that second half. But what a response from Inter as well. I think there was some respects quite fortunate with that first goal from Brozovic, because it's a Candreva deflected cross and he hits and hopes and it goes in, and then all of a sudden the San Siro believes. And I think, again, one of those displays that it's not only valuable for the 3 points and taking advantage of Juventus losing on Saturday night, but what this does within the group in terms of the attitude, the mentality, the belief that they can actually go on and win, particularly after that sticky patch through mid-December into January.
Yeah, also because it's huge. They were a club who kept on taking leads and then blowing them, and this was quite the opposite. To be 2-0 down at half-time and then come back and beat them like this, it was the first time they'd done it in a derby since 1949. Just a couple of things about Ibra. I mean, the big question was, I think, beforehand, would he score against his former team? And also, what noise would Tiziano Crudelli make if he did? And the answer was very much this.
Ibra! 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 Ibra!
And he continues like that for a while. Well, terrific second half performance, Jules, from the Nerazzurri. Nice to see Sanchez popping up with an assist. Eriksen with a lovely free kick as well.
Yeah, and even at 3-2 for Inter, Ibra hit the post in the 90th minute before Lukaku scores the fourth and have that iconic celebration. No, I just had a quick question. If you forget about Eriksen and Victor Moses who came on, but from the starting lineups of the two teams, there were six players who at some point played in England. Can you name the six players?
Okay, so Young, Lukaku.
Two.
Alexis.
Three.
You're then looking at Benacer.
Four.
Yeah.
Two more.
Ibra, of course.
Five. And the last one, which is the hardest, by the way, but I expect...
Did Simon Kjær, did he play?
No.
Did he play No?
No.
Rebic briefly?
No. It was a brief 6-month spell on loan to quite a big English club. One of the top English clubs.
Brief 6 months on loan.
Right. This is podcast gold.
Right. You're playing along, listener.
Yeah,
well.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
Julien's going to come back with the answer very shortly. Just while you're thinking, James, about that, a huge Inter go back on top of the table. And we mentioned that Juventus got beaten the previous day, second time in, 8 days, 2-1 at Verona, promoted Verona. And talk this Monday of Maurizio Sarri paying, in managerial terms, the ultimate price, with Allegri still available, still on contract with Juve, him coming back in. Talk of the fans organising with a hashtag, Sarri out, of the players eager to return to Allegri's tutelage. What's your feeling about the likelihood or the reality of those stories?
I think it's still premature, even though I think some of Sarri's comments in the media have not been let's say, befitting of Juventus manager. I'm talking about after the defeat to Napoli when he said, you know, if we were to lose to anyone, it'd be great to lose to Napoli. So I'm happy about that. That didn't go down particularly well. And also, there is just this sense that it was a big gamble to replace Allegri last summer, particularly with Sarri, who we've spoken about on the Golazzo podcast before in that Maifredi episode, in that he is so different compared with other managers that they have had and had success with in the past. And at the moment, well, not at the moment, but over the last 7 months, this team, you can tell now, it's no longer Allegri's team, in that the mentality that they have when it comes to dropping off, defending deep, being comfortable seeing out games, they no longer do that, which is the big surprise. And they're not Maurizio Sarri's Juventus either, because they're not playing the kind of football that would come to associate with him, even though he said, I can't do that with the characteristics of the players that I've got on this team at the moment. So I think in some respects, there is some unrest there in terms of they're trying to do something different. It's not coming off, but they can't kind of go back to what worked for them last year either. And I do think they're missing in particular at the moment Chiellini, not only because he is their most experienced and best defender, but also in terms of just having a leader like that on the pitch. I think his absence has been overlooked really since he got injured after match day one. But you're right, James. Massimiliano Allegri is still under contract at Juventus, and I think in terms of other options for him, we've spoken about this before. He's a very successful manager and a very charismatic manager, but a very difficult sell for clubs outside of Italy. And in some respects, maybe a Lippi-esque return should not be ruled out.
A little bit of Minister Riscaldata, huh? Always goes down well.
Sì.
Fantastic. We should talk, though, about Verona. Just to fill us in on how much of a shock, how much of an achievement is it for Hellas to beat Juventus?
Well,
with Gianpaolo Pazzini at 35 years of age.
And Fabio Barini up front. I mean, this is a magnificent season that they're having, obviously back in the top flight. I mean, we should remember the kind of gutsy decision that they took on gaining promotion. They did it through the playoffs after sacking Fabio Grosso just a couple of weeks before those playoffs began. Aglietti then got them up and they decided, thanks but no thanks, we're going to appoint a manager who's been sacked three times by Genoa in Ivan Juric. And they've got the lowest wage bill in the league, and they spent €5 million in the transfer window. And I think they're about to recoup around 35, if not even more than that, from the sales next summer of Rachmani and Amrabat, who's going to Fiorentina. So in that sense, no one predicted that they would be in the sixth place and in the Europa League spots at this stage of the season. Having said that, given how well they've played over the last few months, there was this expectation that this game was going to be a real fight for Juventus. And I presume that you watched it, James, on Saturday night. The atmosphere at the Bentegodi, I don't think I've seen anything like that there since the turn of the century. It was remarkable in terms of like the noise that they were creating. And that's one of those grounds which looks empty a lot of the time. And to see it full in the way it was and to see Verona doing well is just a reminder of what a great piazza, you know, what a great football city that is when their fans are not doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
All very interesting, because Lazio also won this weekend. I think their 12th win in 13, a 1-0 win away at the Tardini against Parma. They are now 1 point off the top. You've got three teams separated by just 1 point. Question here from Dan Rosato, amongst other people. Who are the biggest threat to Juve now for the title, Lazio or Inter? What do you think, James?
I think it's still Inter, because Conte's won this league before Simone Inzaghi hasn't. You look at the players that Inter have signed, the investment that they've made in both transfer windows. In fact, they're making a signing today because Samir Handanovic had fractured his finger. That's why he didn't play in the derby at the weekend, and they're signing Emiliano Viviano instead on a free transfer. So they keep re-upping in an effort to win the league. Lazio should not be ruled out. I mean, you mentioned that game that they won in Parma. I mean, some controversy on a quite controversial weekend in terms of refereeing decisions But they did that with what Milinkovic, Savic was suspended. One of their first choice defenders, Radu, was also out injured. Some of their players, like Correa, for example, not 100% fit. To go there and keep winning, I think they're unbeaten now in 18 games, is very, very impressive indeed. And guess who they play at the weekend, James? They play Inter.
James, a question regarding Inter. Having such a title race, and we know that Juventus is going to take seriously the Champions League fight and all that, I don't know if Inter de Milan is going to do the same with the Europa League, if they are going to regard it as an important competition or not, because this is going to be key in the title race.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why they wanted to strengthen in January was to not so much take seriously the Europa League, but be in a position where they can give their first choice players a rest. That was certainly how it was pitched to Olivier Giroud, even though Giroud didn't end up joining the club in the end, that his minutes would primarily come in the Europa League, as well as coming on for Lukaku in Serie A. So, look, I think the chance to end what has been a decade now without a league title, with, let's not forget, quite a big series of transfer spends in that time, which has often been wasted, I think Inter really are seizing the moment now, and Conte will accept nothing less. I think, you know, even if he would say, look, second place in my first year, that's great, he'd be very upset inside if they end up falling short come May.
All right, James. Should we get the answer to Jules' quiz question? Those six players.
The other one.
So the sixth one is Daniele Padelli, the goalkeeper who was on loan at Liverpool in 2007.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Extraordinary. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully he was better at that time than he is now, because that mistake on Milan's first goal was pretty bad.
James Horncastle in Italy. Among the other Italian stories that we didn't quite touch on there, Atalanta moving 3 points clear of Roma in the race for Champions League places. Roma, who got beaten at home to Bologna. Atalanta, meanwhile, winning at Fiorentina 2-1. Napoli, who'd had 3 wins in a row, promptly went and lost to Lecce, the team that had seen Walter Mazzarri's reign end at Torino with their victory at Torino last weekend. Torino this time have got a new manager in, Moreno Longo. He promptly lost 3-1 to Sampdoria. Other new managers this weekend, Diego Lopez got a point in his debut for Brescia after they'd fired Eugenio Carini for the second time this season. Since the round of games, another manager's gone, Semplice at Spal, with Gigi Di Biagio coming in. It's all go in the world of Serie A management. Woohoo! After this, we'll be heading over the Alps to Germany.
It seems as though Serie A is a bit of a dumping ground these days, doesn't it? Where all the Premier League's footballing flops are sent to get them off the wage bill. It's literally a weekly reminder for Man United of all their very expensive mistakes. But thankfully, with Paddy Power's money back specials, not all your mistakes cost you as much. Get money back as a free bet on football every week. See on site for the latest. Paddy Power, home of the money back special. Selected markets only. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Rafa, always like to start with a little bit of status quo. Bayer Leverkusen, they're celebrating what was, we heard about the Milan derby, but this was another contender for game of the season at the Bayer Arena.
It was pretty spectacular, as it often is when Dortmund and Bayer Leverkusen come up against each other, because they can't defend, neither of them. But they do score some beautiful goals. Probably Dortmund's third to pick at a bunch because of the movement and the approach.
Was that the Emre Can one?
No, that was the Guerrero one. I mean, Emre Can's one was pretty good as
pretty
well.
Pretty good, yeah.
But as on a team debut. Goal, the third one is actually sensational. And unfortunately, Dortmund are the one side where you'd think they go away from home and score three goals and you still can't quite back them to win the game. And this is what transpired. They were 3-2 up with 10 minutes to go and managed to concede two goals when Leon Bailey, the substitute, scored. So a big, big defeat that felt especially painful because it brought back all the discussions and all the problems about their defensive ineptitude. And for once, they couldn't outscore the opponents. And even Haaland didn't score. So
Sancho got a goal, but it was disallowed for a foul in the build-up. But Haaland, was his performance markedly different to other ones, or he just didn't get the chances?
Rubbish, James. Absolutely crap. No, I mean, he was fine. He was fine. He just... he had one or two opportunities. One, he blasted at the keeper from a tight angle, which could have gone in. Looked not quite as effective and didn't get on the score sheet, but I don't think that anyone will blame him for the fact that Dortmund lost this game. The bigger debate really is that Emre Can coming in on his debut, doing well enough, but not well enough to effectively shield this very leaky Dortmund defence. So almost back to square one for them.
No team in the top half of the Bundesliga has conceded more goals than Dortmund, which is obviously a concern not just in the Bundesliga, but also with the Champions League and prospect Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, but I mean, PSG, you know, if they got up front.
So now I was just surprised how Favre was quite open after the game by saying, I've never had a team with so many problems or difficulties. I don't know what the exact
translation. I think Dortmund might be saying the same about him.
Yeah, probably.
But as a manager, I don't know.
Yeah, no,
I mean, they can't figure it out. Different players, different people from Dortmund putting forward different theories. Why it doesn't work? Is it individual? Is it a lack of application, lack of aggression? Is it organisation?
I mean, it's not that bad. They're 4 points off the top in third place in the Bundesliga.
I know, but they fell apart in the second half of the season last year to gift the title to Bayern. And this year, when Bayern are again, by their standards, vulnerable, Dortmund don't take advantage. And they don't take advantage because they're not good enough winning games, but they can't defend, which makes this very galling and very difficult, I think, for the club and for the bosses to take. And Favre, I think, privately will always point at the players and say, well, this guy is not quite right and this guy can't defend and this guy makes a mistake. But at some stage, I think you have to deal with those issues and help this team collectively to do better. And they're just such an easy touch. They're just so soft. It's ridiculous. I mean, not even PSG are as bad when it comes to.
I guess we'll see.
When it comes to defending.
I told you that game, the Dortmund PSG will finish 4-3 and 5-4, something like this. It's the most entertaining tie, I think, of the last 16.
But Rafael, I wonder how many of those Dortmund players are natural defenders, or they've got a. Defend naturally, like for example, the Dortmund midfielders, because Witsel, for example, is not one of them. Guerreiro, neither. I mean, they are all attacking and they are given the responsibility to do something that they don't want to do, or they don't know how to do very well.
It's a fair point to an extent. I think the fullbacks are attacking fullbacks. Hakimi is often out of position because he loves to go forward and he's probably more effective in a more advanced role. Guerreiro, I think less so. He's shown already with Portugal that he can be very disciplined playing as a proper left back. And then you have Axel Zagadou, who is, in terms of the physique and the potential, a sensational centre-back. Strong, pacey, good on the ball. Next to him, you've got a guy who's won the World Cup with Germany. He might not be quite at his best, but he's still pretty good in Mats Hummels. So I think it's a little bit easy to say, you know, I don't quite have the right players and the players don't do this, the players don't do that. I think there are so many teams that would love to swap with Dortmund when it comes to the squad that they have, even in defence. And the reason why Favre is repeatedly under criticism is because, at least in theory, a lot of people suspect that another manager with a more defensive setup would just get more out of them.
Who do you think might be in line to?
If Dortmund knew, then I think Favre would have been gone in the summer.
Ah, okay.
But they, like Bayern, can't quite figure out who that new man would be and who is available. So it's very, very difficult. But this was another game which went, I think, quite some way to suggest that Favre will not stick around beyond the summer.
Right. Well, there they are in third place. Bayer, meanwhile, now 6 points off the top. But interesting clashes. Well, Marco Reus picking up an injury that's going to see him out for how long, do you think? Is he going to miss the PSG tie?
Yeah, well, certainly the first leg. He hurt his groin in the cup defeat against Bremen. This is another thing we should really mention, because not only did Dortmund lose this game to have a real setback in the title race, but also they got knocked out of the cup, which is by far the easiest way to get within touching distance of a trophy. They lost away to Bremen, one of the not informed teams of the league, and again lost in typical Dortmund fashion, sleepwalking through the first half, being 3-0 down, then coming back, but it wasn't quite enough. I don't know if it was 3-0, 2-0. Anyway, they threw the game away effectively in the first half. Mm. Not good enough.
I see. Did look like a key round of fixtures this weekend, because not only did you have Bayer against Borussia Dortmund, but also the top two going at it. Exciting prospect here with Timo Werner and Robert Lewandowski facing off. How many goals did they get?
All the goals came at the Bayer Leverkusen Dortmund game, I'm afraid. I mean, Lewandowski had a quiet game. Could have scored a couple of goals, got a little bit unlucky with sort of deflection. That was really Bayern's story in the first half. They created opportunities. They got behind this quite deep, quite defensive Leipzig team with five at the back. But then the final ball, the cross didn't come off, or the ball bounced around and ricocheted or was cleared off the line. And then Leipzig kind of grew into the game, had one or two counterattacks, and they really got Bayern thinking. You could almost feel how Bayern suddenly felt, uh-oh, these guys are pretty good. We better not expose ourselves here and slow down a little bit. And as they slowed down, that enabled Leipzig to grow into the game, take more of the ball, become more comfortable, and then in the end create probably, on balance, the better chances. I mean, two of their chances were sort of 100%ers. Sabitzer, from the penalty spot, the ball came to him and he had a lot of time to place a shot. He blasted it over. Werner, from a counter-attack, in front of Neuer with all the time in the world to pick a spot, skews it wide. And Bayern almost lucky to get away with a 0-0 draw at home, which, of course, by their standards, is hugely disappointing.
Yeah, first time they dropped points since the turn of the year. How significant is this goalless draw? Who will be most disappointed by it?
It's big because, on the one hand, it doesn't change anything. You know, Bayern are still 1 point clear. Leipzig are happy that they're still in the title race. Bayern are still happy because they control their own destiny, as it were. But it taught us a little bit about both sides. And Leipzig, you know, have now failed to win any of those big games this season. At the same time, they haven't lost them either. So I think if you're Nagelsmann, you're thinking, we are maturing, we're becoming more comfortable dealing with the situations. We can come back from either being goals down or being down in terms of the possession, as they were in this game, and really exert ourselves and impose ourselves towards the second half. So lots of positives from that. But at the same time, you could also feel that a team that would win the title, let's say a Dortmund under Klopp, or even a few years ago, a Wolfsburg under Magath, would have taken that chance, because that was a chance to beat Bayern and to really inflict a big blow on Bayern. And they couldn't quite do it. So Bayern will ultimately feel that they got away with it, but they would still be worried, I think, with how their game kind of just ebbed away. And they couldn't really dominate for 90 minutes. The bench was quite thin. Coutinho came on, but didn't really affect the game. They have a lot of problems in the wide positions, which are quite key for this Bayern side. You know, like any possession side, the real cut and thrust, if you were, comes from the wings. But Gnabry is a little bit out of shape, coming back from injury. Perisic is injured. Müller is never natural in that right position. And Kingsley Coman has only just come back after 4 months out with an injury. So that's where I think the concern is, and that's where a Bayern team who felt very confident about themselves, not just domestically, but also going into the Champions League knockout stages, after this game will, I think, be slightly less assured just where they are sort of in the grand scheme of things.
Right. None of the top four winning in the Bundesliga, which remains pretty tight at the top. Mönchengladbach didn't play their match with Cologne postponed because of Sturm Kjaer.
Sabine.
Do you have a different name for that storm?
Sabine.
Are they not internationally denominated?
We can't pronounce Kjaer, so we call her Sabine. I don't know, because it's difficult.
Crikey. Okay, well, that's interesting. Other Bundesliga news includes the fact that Jürgen Klinsmann's struggles continue with Hertha Berlin. They were beaten 3-1 at home to fellow strugglers, Mainz. That sounds huge.
It was a big defeat, and it came on the back of a big defeat in the Cup as well. Their big dream has been to make the final. The final is, of course, staged in Berlin since 1985, and Hertha have never been there, which is a big disappointment. So Hertha's first team in any case. So that is, it's another week like Dortmund's to forget, really, for okay. Klinsmann.
Let's ask some questions then. Paramal A says, now that Lucas Hernandez is back, how will Bayern's backline look? And what will be the future of Alphonso Davies? Will he go into singing?
He could go into singing because he's very talented. He's a good possible comedian as well. He's very funny on social media. Yeah.
Right.
But he's been outstanding as a left back in recent months. And I think the fact that Hernandez returns doesn't really change any of that. He's been arguably Bayern's most persistent, consistent performer in 2020. And I think that it'll be between Hernandez and Alaba and Pavard to sort out who will play at the back. It does probably mean that Jerome Boateng will go back to the bench.
Right.
And if they can get one more solution on the right-back situation, where Odriozola has only featured a few minutes so far, then maybe we'll see Pavard also moving back into the centre-back position. But okay. It helps Bayern because they were a little bit stretched and a little bit slow at the back. And Hernandez will help in that respect.
Okay. Alvaro, did you see Alphonso Davies' rendition of I Want It That Way? It was I Want It That Way, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Backstreet
yeah.
Boys. Boys. Did you see this or not?
I wasn't lucky enough to see it, but will endeavour to see it.
Yeah, it's not just his singing, but his whole kind of his choreography. Mise-en-scène is magnificent.
And Bayern finished the game with three left-footed players in the back four when Lucas Hernandez and Alaba and Davies played, which is quite unusual. Usually managers like the symmetrical of a right foot player on the right, and then the two centre backs, one right foot, one left foot. There are three or four. It's pretty unusual.
Finally, Barcelona on Sunday played also with three left-footed defenders
for longer than at Bayern as well.
Yep.
Okay. Sam Jones asks, does Firmino going to Bayern have any substance, or is it just tabloid rubbish, Raf?
I would have to look deeper into the story to tell you if it's just tabloid rubbish or not, but I can't see how it's going to be viable in financial terms or in sporting terms. Bayern are looking for wide players, and I think Kai Havertz is still the main option as the number 10 as far as strengthening is concerned. So Firmino doesn't feel to me like the natural target for this Bayern side.
Firmino, says Rafa.
Correct.
Right, okay. Mark de Bavaria says, isn't Thiago one of the most in-form and best central midfielders in Europe at the moment? Flying under the radar for a lot of people, not just outside of Germany. Why? Your thoughts, Raf?
I love Thiago. I don't think he's under the radar at all. He's been quite outstanding in recent weeks. He had a slightly less accomplished game against Leipzig. Gave a couple of balls away. Wasn't quite as influential in the final third, where he really comes to life, either by going himself, he scored three goals recently, or trying to find that through ball that he plays so well. And it's interesting because he's out of contract in 2021, and there are suggestions that he might become available, if of course he doesn't agree a new contract with Bayern, an extension. And I think he'd be the kind of player that many clubs would love to build their midfield around. He's so accomplished and so pressing resistant. And once he has the ball, basically can't get it off him, which is a real useful skill to have.
All right. Excellent stuff. Loads more to discuss on today's edition of the Totally Football Show. Up next, we'll be dropping in on Portugal, Liga Norse, and also a bit of Liga.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Here's a question from Dean T, who throws this one at us. Ask the panel what is their second favourite football league, their first in brackets obviously being the one they report on. Alvaro, what's your second favourite football league after Liga?
It was always the Argentinian league.
Oh yeah, nice. Yeah.
Until
what?
Seriously, in the 90s, definitely. Yes. Right.
So yeah. You used to wake up at 2 a.m. to watch the games?
I watch a lot of Argentinian league.
That's
seriously,
that's
I mean
good.
It.
That's good.
Yeah, they show it in Canal Plus, I believe. And right now, the Premier League.
Rafa, what about you? If your Bundesliga game is finished and there's a choice of, say, French and Dutch and Spanish and Portuguese, which would you opt for?
Serie A. Sempre Serie A.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Jules, how about you?
It has to be La Liga.
Really?
When I was younger, and because we used to go on holidays there a lot and all of that, I was speaking the language really well, better than English. And I used to buy...
Spanish was better than your English.
Yeah. And I used to buy the Marca book before the season started with all the teams, all the players and everything. I was really into my Spanish football, yeah. Right. I really thought I would live there even to work there.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Still to this day, you're kind of...
So still to this day, I watch...
You also watch a lot of Liga NOS, don't you?
I watch everything, really, that I can.
But
La Liga is... Yeah, I know. Yeah. But La Liga is... If I had to just pick another one outside of Liga and the Premier League, it would be La Liga.
As a PSG fan, Jules loves the competitiveness of La Liga.
The Liga NOS had a big game this weekend, which I wonder, did you watch Porto Benfica?
I did watch the...
Oh, right, because that was awesome. We've had some great games over the weekend. Often a cagey affair, but not this time, with a 3-2 win for Porto, which maybe, just maybe, reopens the title question in Liga NOS. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Benfica still have 4 points. Mm-hmm. Are still 4 points clear of Porto, and considering they've only lost 2 games this season out of 20... winning the other 18, and those 2 games were against Porto, which they're not going to face again until next season. It's hard to see them losing another one or drawing 4 and Porto coming back. But it was really good, and it's always a big rivalry, and it was a great atmosphere as well at the Dragao. And Porto, I think, did really well. I'm struggling to understand how they could have been 7 points behind before the game, because it's a really good Porto team, I think. But on the night this weekend, they were by far the best team, I think.
Okay, Porto are going to be facing Bayer Leverkusen in the Europa League in a couple of weeks' time.
Do you remember Adel Tarabt?
Yes.
Who has reinvented himself as a defensive midfielder in this Benfica side. No, he didn't have his best game of the season on Saturday, but he's been really good for Benfica in that sort of holding role, believe it or not.
Extraordinary.
Where the most... ill-disciplined player that we've probably seen ever has become a very disciplined player in front of a back four.
You say he reinvented himself. Was it the manager? Was it Bruno Lage who's come up with
that? Yeah, I think so, yeah. And, you know, he had all those disappointing stints there and there. You know, he went to play a bit everywhere. And I think Benfica thought, do you know what? A bit like Julian Weigl, who they just got at Dortmund, although Weigl had been playing more than what Tarabt had before. But those players who people are kind of forgotten about or given up on, that kind of thing, and then we can maybe... bring them back to life almost, and that's what they did with Tarabt. Certainly this season he has been really, really good for them.
That is remarkable. Okay, Jules, for your day job, of course, you cover Ligue 1.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And Ligue 1, which featured the leaders PSG without Neymar beating Lyon, Rudy Garcia's Lyon 4-2 this weekend. How come Neymar was absent?
He still had a bit of a pain, he said, and he missed the game as well in midweek.
Pain as in hangover.
Maybe from his birthday party. But I think the idea, most importantly, is to almost wrap him in cotton so he doesn't get any little niggle or anything before the Dortmund game, because, you know, him being out at kind of this stage of the season, more or less the last two years, obviously that really hurt PSG. And this one, they really... want to preserve him from anything so he can be fully fit and on top form like he's been the last 3 months for the Dortmund game next week.
I see. A 4-2 win here. One of the goals for PSG coming from Lyon's Fernando Marçal.
Encore un appel. Regardez encore. Anthony Lopez qui était battu. Ballon qui va être rendu. Oh, c'est incroyable. Oh, c'est incroyable.
The most comical own goal that I think you will see this season.
Really? It was worse than Mariappa's, do you feel?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's Julian Draxler who's on the left-hand side in the box and tried to cross the ball towards Kylian Mbappe. And Thiago Mendes, the Lyon midfielder, tackles the ball to give it back to Draxler on the corner line, if you want. So then Draxler has a second chance to cross the ball. He crosses it again, more or less in the same area. And Marçal, the Lyon left-back, who's arriving, facing his own goal, and just smashes the ball. A bit like Mariappa, but what's a bit more comical is the 1-2 between Draxler and the Lyon midfielder before that. And then Marçal just smashing the ball in his own net. And at that time, just after the break, at 3-0 up, it looked like PSG were going to destroy them. And yet, they took the eyes off the ball. I think they, like Tuchel said after the game, they thought they had won the game already. And Lyon, in 11 minutes, came back.
Right, made it 3-2.
Yeah, with a very good second goal. And then almost had a big chance for Moussa Dembélé to make it 3-3 as well.
Wow.
Yeah,
but
and after that...
Cavani came on and and made it 4-2.
Yeah.
Cavani.
And that goal, the fourth one, right. 98 seconds, 38 passes, and every single PSG player touched the ball before Cavani scored his 199th. Goal for the club as well, so it meant a lot to him. You could see in his celebration, I think, all the frustration from the Atletico move that didn't happen,
right?
And the criticism after that from Atleti owner and president, and that little incident between him and Cavani's brother. And I think he got it all
as well,
out.
No?
Yeah, and the mum as well got involved. So I think all that frustration came out after that goal, and the Parc des Princes was singing that song for Cavani.
What was that? What song was that?
You know, I've sung already on BT Sport, cool show. Il m'entraîne au bout de la nuit, d'Insan Cavani. It's better if producer Charlie, you know, play the whole stadium.
Maybe he will. Maybe if he can find that. What song is that from? What's that, to the tune of what?
Les Démons de Minuit from back in the 80s, one of the most famous songs in France in the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice, Image. Jules. You mentioned your boy Ryan Cherki.
Who started the game, maybe. I think he was a bit too early for...
Right. How old is he?
16.
16.
I know. And he did okay. He was involved in Lyon's first goal. He came off after an hour, but he felt like... It felt like it was a bit premature to start him in a game like this because he's so young and the hype is so big that you don't want to sort of knock his confidence or anything. And I would not have started him. And right. Garcia went with it and I was like, not so sure. And then Lyon did better once he was off as well because they had a really good spell after that with Toko Ekambi. But he's still one to keep an eye on for the future because he's going to be very special. There's no doubt about it.
Now, last week we were here talking about Dimitri Payet beating a couple of men pretty much on the touchline, but then still managing to squeeze the ball in for a remarkable goal for Marseille. 7 days on, he's done it again. A very different goal, though. How did this one pan out?
Yeah, and he was in a game again, a bit like the Saint-Etienne one last week, where this one against Toulouse, where it was quite a tight game, and he just got the ball 25 yards away from the goal and just smashing it in the top corner. I still think he's overweight and I still think that he could be a much better player, but he has those moments of pure brilliance. And without him, they certainly wouldn't be second with the record that they had under AVB because...
13 matches unbeaten.
It's incredible. And he's just bailed them out so many times by purely on his own talent because, again, fitness-wise, I don't think he's at the best that he could be. But it's remarkable how week in and week out, when he wants to, he turns it on and just... makes huge differences.
Just imagine how much difference he could make when he converts to defensive midfielder as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like Tara. What's interesting is that Marseille have the second best defense in Europe after Real Madrid. I think a level with Liverpool or something like that. They've only conceded one goal in 2020. It's incredible. And clearly AVB is building that defense, making that team really solid, and then just relying on Payet pretty much on his own to make the difference. And again, they won that game. It's not pretty to watch at times, but it's very, very efficient in both boxes. Right. And it's working for them because now there's no way they're not going to qualify for the Champions League unless a disaster happens. But I don't see that happen, and they deserve to.
Okay, they're taking on Lyon in the French Cup quarterfinals this week, which will also see Belfort, not familiar with them, against Rennes, Dijon against PSG, and Epinal against Saint-Étienne. Alvaro.
Yeah, I believe that Dimitri Payet can be one of these really good players who can retire without winning a title. He's on his way to suffer from that because he could have won the World Cup for France. He got an injury in the Europa League final against Atletico de Madrid and he has never won a title. For a player, this quality is a real shame.
Yeah, he lost the Euro 2016 final. He lost the Europa League final against Atleti as well in 2018. And then before that, Marseille didn't have many occasions or the clubs that he's been at too, Lille, Nantes or Saint-Etienne either. So maybe. But you talked about Rennes in your French Cup. Mm-hmm. They sacked the president, Olivier Letang.
President?
Yeah, in midweek. So they're owned by the Pinot family, one of the richest families in the world, who own Gucci and Yves Saint Laurent and Balenciaga.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk of them being in for Milan as well.
Exactly. Yeah, which I believe was not true. And the son of the Pinot family is married to Salma Hayek,
the
Mexican
nice.
Actress. Mm. But Olivier Letang was a very divisive president. He was not getting on the best with the manager, Julien Stéphan. So he was gone. And their dream of Arsene Wenger coming over. So they've made contact over the weekend. And they would pretty much say to him, you're the president, but you can be sporting director. You can pretty much be anything you want. And that's how much they want him there. I still don't think he would go. But why not?
Because he's too busy doing kind of being sport or what?
No, I mean, I think he likes the role of FIFA. And I think he always told FIFA, if a club comes for me and it's a good project for me enough or a good opportunity or big enough, then I would go for it. And I think FIFA know that. I'm just not sure if Ren is what he wants right now. And if that role of president / sporting director or whatever is also what he wants, I still think he wants to manage. But they might be very convincing and be able to convince him.
Okay, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Next up, everybody, we're off to sunny Spain. Bigger than anything this weekend in La Liga, Álvaro, was what happened in the Copa del Rey last midweek. Real Madrid and Barcelona, as you mentioned at the top, both knocked out in the quarterfinals, both by Basque sides, who then met each other this weekend. Extraordinary. Can you just take us back, first of all, to the game at the Bernabeu, Real Sociedad against Real Madrid. Extraordinary scenes.
Yes, with a great display of Real Sociedad, especially attacking display. I wouldn't compare this Real Sociedad to Borussia Dortmund, but the thing is that they know how to attack and then they don't know how to defend. And they got a 4-1 lead at the Santiago Bernabeu and they almost wasted it. So at the end, the game was 4-3 for Real Sociedad, and Real Madrid had a glorious chance. Sergio Ramos basically had a header from the penalty spot to draw the game and take it to the extra time. That didn't happen. Real Sociedad qualified after beating Real Madrid. Athletic de Bilbao qualified after beating Barcelona. Iñaki Williams scoring in the aggregate of the second half. And
great scenes as he's dragging Gerard Piqué along.
Yeah.
La peina el León, el más León de todos, Iñaki Williams adelantándose en el centro, creo que fue a Sergio Busquets, que no sé si incluso también la llega a tocar, balón al fondo de la red, si en la Liga fue Guaduriz, en la Copa es Williams.
It's funny because in a TV night show, Iñaki Williams said in the past that Gerard Piqué was probably the quickest defender he had ever faced. And as soon as Iñaki Williams got the ball there, yeah, I was thinking, these two are going to have a race. Let's see who wins it. And it was Iñaki Williams by a great margin, actually.
So, Piqué's basically hanging onto his shirt, lying on the ground and being dragged along the turf. Remarkable.
Very remarkable. Mm. And the picture is, obviously, there have been plenty of memes, I don't know if you call them that way, and social media pictures about that. So these two Basque teams are in the semi-final of the Cup, all together with Granada, which is one of the surprises in La Liga. They already collected like 30 points, so they are pretty much safe, even though they cannot obviously calm down too much. And then Mirandés, a team from the second division, who happen to be also from the north of Spain, not the north in the coast, but 100 kilometers away from Bilbao. And some say in Spain, even some really famous journalist, that this is bad for the Spanish Cup because Real Madrid and Barcelona are out. But right, for us that want to see something different, it's definitely something glorious because it was Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico and Sevilla winning it uninterruptedly since 2008. And now you have a team, or Valencia, sorry. And now you have a team like Athletic de Bilbao or Real Sociedad or Mirandés or Granada who can actually win it. And this is great because Athletic de Bilbao and Real Sociedad, perhaps nobody knows much about it because in the 80s they stopped winning titles, but before that they won a combined 35 titles between them, a Spanish Cup and a Spanish League, which is something like the 18% of the Spanish titles at stake in Spanish football history. Wow. So it's pretty good for them, and the sense of euphoria in the Basque country, you could feel it in the derby this week, which Real Sociedad won.
Okay. Imagine Saudi Arabia, who paid 120 million euros for the Super Cup, and they'll have like a team from the second division and then a few, you know.
I would love that to happen.
Right. So it was going back to the game at the Bernabeu, Martin Ødegaard on loan from Real Madrid scored, yes, against the Merengues, the opener. And then there was an absolute display, the first of two this week, from Alexander Isak, who Frida Faglund was singing the praises of on Monday's show. Leo Chaklides says, can we have some chat on Alexander Isak? Two goals and two assists against Real Madrid in the Copa, and then another goal and another assist against Athletic Club de Bilbao at the weekend.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that at Bernabeu, he was spectacular and he could have scored one or two more goals. So I think that he's not still a finished article, as you call it. But against Athletic de Bilbao, he didn't start. And from the minute he came on the pitch, he made such a difference. It wasn't only the goal and the assist, it was also the technical display, the number of flicks that he did. Athletic de Bilbao defense didn't know how to stop him.
Right.
And this player has scored already 7 cup goals, and he has scored around 7 or 8 in La Liga as well. So
he's got 13 in 12 games. He came from Borussia Dortmund.
Yes.
And I think had a really slow start when he first arrived. What is he now, 20? Not even?
Yeah, he's around that age. And Borussia Dortmund can buy him back for 30 million euros.
Okay.
So let's see if Borussia wants to trigger that release clause.
Okay, so Frieda was talking about him as like the next big thing. Famously, and we mentioned this yesterday, I think it was Marca talked about his performance in the Cup and put the caption, "He is like the Swedish Ibra."
Yeah.
Wonderful. But how big a prospect is he?
A very good one, I would say. I don't know if as good as Martin Odegaard, because Odegaard seems to be in a certain level himself. But Isak has plenty of characteristics that could make him a great striker. Number one, that he's gifted technically for a player his size. Then he can score goals, I would say that quite easily as well. And then his positioning is excellent. And then he's got that second of pose inside the box that makes him so special. He's got imagination. He can stop. He doesn't get stressed when he's got a chance in front of him. So I believe that he's not a finished article yet, as I said before, but he's at the same time one of the most exciting prospects of La Liga.
Okay, time slows down for him, does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely.
That's really nice that Borussia Dortmund can bring him back, because that's exactly what they need.
For 30 million.
Teenage goal scorer. Really short on kind of young.
But it was a story of he was doing so well in Sweden and then everybody was after him, but he was far too young to have an impact anywhere, and he always was going to need some time. A bit like Odegaard when he moved to Real Madrid, and I think even at the start of the season he was probably not ready to play ahead of William Jose, but now he probably is a bit more better, and then you see all that talent coming through, but you need to give all of them some time, because you know not everybody is Messi or Ronaldo at that age.
And Real Sociedad seems to be the club at the minute, because they've got an attacking minded manager, Imanol Alguacil, again, who has to address the defensive problems of Real Sociedad, but the free flowing players, they flourish under him, like Mikel Merino, the former Newcastle player,
right.
Julian Jose, until he had a spat with the manager, he was very good. Isak, Odegaard, Oyarzabal, Portu, all of them are attacking players, and 6 or 7 of them, they are doing very well this season, because Imanol Alguacil is using all of them.
Well, their cup tie, well, it's the first leg of their cup tie, is this week, isn't it?
It's this week, yeah. And
okay.
The second leg will be at the beginning of March.
Right. In La Liga news, Real Madrid and Barcelona both did get victories in the league this weekend. Real Madrid away at Osasuna. Sergio Ramos, who failed to score in that cup tie, did get a goal here. Barcelona, meanwhile, went to Betis Sevilla, Quique Setién up against his former club. And that was a little bit tighter, that one, 3-2 to the Catalans.
It was, and at the same time, I like the way Barcelona managed to overcome a couple of adversities. Number one, letting Betis score the first goal, 1-0, and then they were behind the scoreline again, 2-1. And however, they managed to come back. So overall, Barcelona, considering that they've got only 14 first-team players fit, they did kind of all right. They depend a lot still on Lionel Messi, who wouldn't, but this is worrying because they have done a massive investment and Antoine Griezmann is not delivering, because there is not a position for him at Barcelona.
Some people would say the same to the match official for the game in Seville.
Yes, it was the referee José María Sánchez Martínez, who, by the way, he won't be refereeing next week,
right.
So the Spanish FA has punished him for his bad performance against Betis. Basically, there were 3 decisions that he made wrong. Number one, Sergi Roberto should have been sent off for a very bad challenge. He wasn't even shown the yellow card. Then Fekir was sent off for 2 yellows straight in a matter of 5 seconds. The first one for a challenge, and the second one from just protested, nothing more than that. And he was sent off for that, because the referee, I think that he got too much ego in this case. And basically, he didn't like that Fekir just walk off protesting a little bit the referee's first decision.
What do you call it when a referee is rested for a weekend?
To put him in the fridge.
You put him in the fridge? Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
On ice.
Put him on ice. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so
I just ask, Alvaro, what's the fallout of the whole Messi Abidal thing? Because I think we didn't really get into it.
That's true. We touched on it on Thursday, but that was, of course, after our last Euro one.
Yeah, that happened last Tuesday. And probably you know that Abidal said a few things about the team and he questioned the intensity of their training and their commitment to the former manager, Ernesto Valverde, to the point that Lionel Messi took that message personally. At the end of the day, he's Barcelona's captain, and he replied to Abidal in social media. Well, some say that Abidal is a dead man walking right now, and there will be a chance to obviously sack him as a Barcelona sports secretary. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens very soon.
This notion of some kind of schism between Leo Messi and directors at the club was taken by some as an indication that he might decide to finally move on from Barcelona this summer. Is that wild conjecture, Alvaro?
That's unlikely to happen. Right. Okay. That's still unlikely because, number one, you have to make a huge investment because he's getting paid a lot and all the add-ons that he make. And also
How much are we talking?
It could be like around 70 million a year, easily.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Lionel Messi, his wages are astonishing. And number two, I think Lionel Messi is still quite identified with Barcelona. Mm. He's at the end of the day a boy from the academy. And the only problem here is that this is the lowest point of Messi's relationship with the club, because Barcelona as a club, they've been trying to please Messi for the last 10 years, trying to guess what Messi would like, especially after the departure of Guardiola, to keep him happy. And now that they cannot do that, the question is, what is this board going to do next, or what is going to be their next move to please Messi? Mm. They made an attempt, which I believe that it was just a firework, to bring Neymar, because they went to talk to PSG, or they tried with no money at all. And Lionel Messi, obviously, he wants to compete and he wants to have a winning team around him because he's turning 33 in June.
How did Messi only win one Champions League in the last 8 years? This is crazy stuff. Barca never put the right team around him. Mm. He's the best player that's ever played the game, and he's only won one out of eight in the last Champions League because he's often had to do with not an average team, but a team that was not as good as it should have been.
The thing is that Barcelona resembles more of Argentina as the years go by, in the sense that in the past, Lionel Messi had some freedom because he was playing with Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, and some other great players. And not all the responsibility relied on him, even though he was the focal point and he was the guy who was putting the cherry on top of the cake. But at the minute, Lionel Messi has to do everything, to the point that I think that the game against Betis explains very well. He didn't score a goal. By the way, he's missing quite many chances lately, but he had to give the three assists himself because there is not player at Barcelona at the minute who can assist as good as Messi.
Indeed. Atletico Madrid got their first win in six and they've gone back up to fourth place. It was 1-0. Over Granada. Getafe are still third after they picked up their fourth Liga win on the spin, beating Valencia 3-0. Bosch had some of that. And Oli Burke, remember him?
Yes.
Remember, yeah?
Yeah, from Leipzig.
He became only the second Scottish player ever to score in La Liga when he netted for Alaves against Eibar. Who's the first? That's the question. Go on, Jules. Who was the first Scottish player?
Archibald.
Yes. You're so good.
1987.
Burke's certainly the first Scottish player to be referred to as coming to a German team with an empty hard drive.
An empty hard drive. I'll always treasure that description.
Hasenhüttl.
And Atem Ben Arfa made his debut for Valladolid.
Oh, did he? Yes.
Have you seen his warm-up?
Nope.
Oh, my word.
What happened?
He was just walking alongside the touchline. That was his warm-up. He was walking, just waiting. He was doing stretching. I mean, stretching, he couldn't even touch his toes. And then it was the worst warm-up I've ever seen in my whole life. And then they brought him on for the last 10 minutes or something. But hey, Ronaldo, I mean, Ben Arfa playing in the team that Ronaldo owns is just, I mean, it's just amazing. And Ronaldo played a big part in convincing him to go there. And now let's see what he can do for the end of the season.
Yeah. And I would like to say something about another French player who has been,
Please do.
I don't know if he has been controversial in his career. Mm. There is that perception. Nabil Fekir.
Oh,
but yeah, he was astonishing against Barcelona. He was so good. It's a real shame that the referee took personally Nabil Fekir's gesture. the referee called it unconsidered, but Fekir, over 60 minutes, he was running that game. He was unbelievable, and he scored the goal against Barcelona doing what he does best, which is deciding to shoot from outside the box in the counter-attacks himself. He's never generous in those occasions, and he does it so well.
Then he got sent off, and Longley got sent off as well. All the French got sent off.
What a shame. Robert is currently languishing down in 13th place, but a full 10 points above the bottom three, so probably all right. Well, very shortly, we'll have some other things to discuss, but right now, it's time to hear from Paddy Power.
Hello, listeners. I've got Lee Price on the line from Paddy Power. And Lee, another incredible weekend at the top of Serie A. So what's that done to the odds of who's going to win the Scudetto?
Well, I thought this weekend felt like a major momentum shift. Our traders, though, were distinctly nonplussed. Shows how knee-jerk I am. That's because we're still odds on that Juve win the title. They're 4-6 to do so. Inter are 23-10 to win the Scudetto, or Lazio 4-1. Clearly, whoever wins the game between those two teams on Saturday will see their odds shorten dramatically. And we think it's going to be the home team, Lazio, who win that game. They're 5-4 favourites to do so. Inter are 15-8 to take the 3 points, and it's all very hard to call. Therefore, I'm going to hop back onto my perch on the fence and say, I like the draw at 5-2.
All right, over in Spain, Getafe keep on winning. What are their odds, please, of finishing in the top four?
God, I love saying Getafe. Makes me feel all cultured in that. What's that? I'm saying it wrong. Yeah, almost certainly. But I wonder if, actually, it's the Paddy Power traders who are the ones really calling it wrong, as they're tipping Getafe to finish outside the top four. They make Atletico 1-3 to be in the Champions League spots, and Sevilla at 4-6 are odds on to join them. Getafe are 11-8 to qualify for the Champions League, despite sitting third.
And speaking of the Champions League, Lee, we're just 1 week away now from Dortmund versus PSG, two teams that score a lot of goals. What's going to happen there?
A juicy one. We make PSG favourites win both the first leg and to qualify. They're 5-4 to win in Dortmund, which would be a huge statement, although arguably the biggest statement would actually be seeing it through in the second leg and not throwing away a lead. Harsh. The Parisians are 1-3 to progress. Dortmund are 15-8 to win the first leg and 9-4 to go through. But either way, we smell goals in this first match. It's odds on that there are at least 3 goals in that tie, and just 6-5 there are 4 or more in 90 minutes in Germany. Bonanza.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Time to have a little look at some more questions from you lovely listeners. Oscar's Toilet Door.
Nice.
Yep. Says, thoughts on the potential Beneliga? Will these cross-border leagues bridge the gap between the top five leagues and those with no money? This is a story that comes up every year at about this time, isn't it? And then nothing happens, which is a shame because I get quite excited by it. I'm not sure how fans in those countries feel. This is the idea that Belgium, the Jupiler League, and the Eredivisie from out of the Netherlands would unify to make a super league, a cross-border super league.
Yeah, I think we had Christophe Terreur earlier in the season when they were always talking about this, which I think is a good idea. Everybody would agree it's a good idea. There's just a lot of details to sort out. The TV rights, for example, have already been sold for both leagues, so how do you deal with that? And the travelling and the fans and all of this. But it would certainly make the top teams in the two leagues stronger, without a doubt, and making them more competitive, and maybe they'll be able to keep the best players a bit longer than what they do already, whether you Ajax or, you know, or Genk or all those teams that produce a lot of very good players or find good players that then go to bigger leagues and bigger clubs. So I think on paper, a lot of people are all in for it. It's just maybe not that easy to put together.
It's worked for England and Wales.
Nice, yeah. By the way, if you're wondering how the likes of Pardew and Chris Powell, etc., Ajax got on this weekend, Eredivisie fixtures were ravaged by Storm
cancels.
Sabina.
Yeah, all cancels.
So, yeah.
Spain and Andorra.
Have
done something like that.
There you go.
But Andorra is a small country. I just wanted to say that Christophe always said that this was something that the Belgian league was pursuing.
Right.
But the Dutch league
was not so much. John Shepherd has a question for you, Alvaro. He says, will Eden Hazard be ready for Real Madrid's clashes with Man City and Barcelona in coming weeks? Also, do you think Real Madrid are actually underdogs against City in the Champions League?
you can never call Real Madrid the underdog, so the answer to that is no.
Okay.
And when it comes to Eden Hazard, it was 75 days last Sunday since his last competitive game.
Wow.
He's got only two games left before the Manchester City clash on the 26th of February, and I think that he will play only if he is fit, but so far he hasn't had any competitive minutes, so I find it quite difficult that Eden Hazard is going to find the fitness ahead of the Manchester City game.
Is he kind of like this decade's Jonathan Woodgate in terms of...
What? No, in I terms can't of, believe you just said that. Those words of, came out of your mouth.
In terms of a Real Madrid signing, who just kind of, it just isn't going to work out at all. I mean, he's gone there. How many actual fit games has he had?
I think he was fit from the end of September until mid-November, especially against PSG, he was very good, Jules can say.
Until Meunier, his own teammates.
And that was the moment when Eden Hazard stopped playing.
Right. Okay. But it's not really worked out for them.
Not so far.
Okay. We'll see. But by the sound of it, you don't anticipate him having much of a role in the Man City Champions League clash.
The thing is that the good thing for him is that clash comes quite late on the 26th of February. I mean, if it was in a week time, that would be almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it would have been beneficial for him that Real Madrid would be in the cup, but they are out. And there are two games left before the Manchester City game. So he needs to play at least an hour of football, I'm guessing, to start against Manchester City. So he might play some minutes at the Santiago Bernabeu against Manchester City, but for a start against Manchester City, I think that we have to wait until the clash at the Etihad.
Thanks very much, Alvaro. Certainly looking forward to those European fixtures, those Europa League and Champions League games, which are coming up not next week, the week after. It's getting mighty close. Hey, and we're going to do a goal show for the Europa League, aren't we, on the Thursday?
We are indeed, yeah. There's some great games there.
Ay, caramba.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, we were talking about Farmers Leagues last time, and I don't know if you heard, because this was then answered by a kind listener, where the term Farmers League comes from.
Oh, yeah, what?
Yeah, and so it's an American baseball term, because as you drop down the divisions there, you'll end up in these kind of rural leagues, where essentially they are agricultural folk, I guess, and that's where Farmers Leagues come from, and it's basically drifted across from baseball into soccer. Kind of the whole footballing argot.
Okay.
Good. Nice. Very good. We, as I say, will return on Thursday. Looking forward to the weekend's fixtures. Alvaro, Jules, Rafa and James Horncastle will be back with us for next Tuesday's European show. So I hope you'll be along for that one as well, listener. Thanks for stopping by today. Have a great week and we'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello listeners, I'm Caroline Barker, host of the Totally Football League Show. I'm joined each week by Sam Parkin. Say hello, Sam.
Hi, Caroline.
By Adrian Clark. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
And a Bolton Wanderers fan too. Not Adrian, but Joe Cridley. Looking forward to League 2?
Yes.
Each week we go headfirst into the EFL to bring you the latest from the pitches to the next crisis to whatever Ian Holloway has said now. From Leeds to Luton, Sunderland to Plymouth, Swindon to Stevenage and everything in between. If it's the EFL you want, we've got you covered. Haven't we, Ollie?
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Your guess is as good as ours. That's the Totally Football League Show, out every Wednesday.
In the most delightful way. It's brilliant. I just love it.
Muddy Knees Media.